Welcome to Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news, trends, and hottest topics that focus on advances in cybersecurity and cyber industry economics. Our expert yet down-to-earth hosts make cybersecurity straightforward. They ask the tough questions and make this challenging topic something that everyone can understand. Our candid approach lets guests open up on topics we would all like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at newcyberfrontier.com. That's www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join today's host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
Welcome to today's episode of New Cyber Frontier. On today, a good friend, Chuck Brooks, is coming back from representing us in the D.C. area, one of the top five followed people by LinkedIn, rated by LinkedIn, one of the top five people to follow. He's an adjunct professor at Georgetown and recently started Brooks Consulting International. Chuck, it's good to have you back and definitely hear your insight from what's going on in the Washington, D.C. area with cybersecurity.
Oh, thank you. It's great to be back. A lot has happened and a lot has sort of been stalled because of our current situation with COVID-19. But it's been a really interesting last year, particularly in Washington, D.C., because I think in our earlier talks, we always talked about the fact that Congress and the government have always been behind when it comes to cybersecurity. Lack of focus, lack of knowledge on the Hill, lack of interest in coordinating. In the last year, I think DOD taking the lead and DHS on the civilian side, they sort of basically redefined the whole cybersecurity mechanism in government for dealing with it, the creation of Cyber Command at DOD, and with DHS, the creation of CISA, Critical Infrastructure Support Agency. So I think there's a whole new attitude in Washington, D.C. when it comes to cybersecurity. And where it's being felt right now is obviously, how we deal with the threats. And the first priority has been critical infrastructure threats. And there's been, a whole slew of them in the last few months. A lot of them directed at finance, at healthcare particularly, and also at electrical plants. And you've seen this on a global scale. And also since I've talked to you, there's been actually instances of cyber warfare where we've had to basically defend our interests against Iran. So the whole sort of ecosystem and things we've been talking about in the past have sort of accelerated in a big way. And it's a much larger scale of importance and functionality in cybersecurity. And I might as well transition now, because what it's like here right now is of course, everyone is sort of hunkered in at home. It was a big transition for government, particularly because government is the largest population in the area and had to transition its workers to work from home. And many of them are dealing with, first of all, different systems of government. And they had no experience of basically working on their own computers because government had not allowed that in the past for most agencies. So it's a big transition. It's also created a lot of problems because the amount of attacks now on an increased surface area, because when people are working at home, is been increased. Adversaries have recognized that there's a lot more vulnerabilities. In fact, phishing attacks are up several 100%, depending which group you look to for statistics. And that even Google said now they get about 18 million COVID-19 emails a day that they have to reject, because what our adversaries are doing is they're basically doing a lot of fraudulent stuff with email phishing, creating fake COVID-19 emails saying that you need to do this or go to this site to check your threats, and they're easily enticing people. And so there's a real problem, because most in corporations it's about 13.3% of people that have malware on their systems, but at home it's closer to 50%. So it's very difficult then for the administrator to control and to have visibility of the home system. So and that reason alone, there's been a lot of attacks. But I think that we've adapted pretty quickly. I think government and the private sector have created user awareness policies pretty quickly. They've integrated the security teams to work on on VPNs with remote workers. They have created incident responses plans, and of course they've looked at basically remote patching and stuff like that. But it still comes down to go ahead.
Let's say, let's take a break here from our sponsors. This is really good as we're getting this out to the listeners, but let's take a break. We'll be right back.
Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
Welcome back to New Cyber Frontier. On today, getting an update from the Washington, D.C. area and a lot about what the government's got going on, politics and such from, and Chuck Brooks. Chuck, we were talking before the break about all the new agencies and what's happened in the last year going on with the COVID-19. Question I had, just edging in there, I know we've had the CISA on with the DHS, the CISA, and the Department of Energy over the last year. We've seen the new frameworks from C2, M2 come out. We've had people on talking about those. It seems like in the last year, we redefined cybersecurity so much, and I heard you mention that. But I remember like a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, we redefined it. 3 years ago, we redefined it. Seems like a continuous redefining. Sometimes it's almost confusing. What's your thoughts on, where we're at now versus is this just another redefining transition?
No, I think it's more than that. One thing I think that the COVID-19 has done, it's really forced us into a bigger digital world. We're now more dependent upon our communications over the internet. We're also the supply chains now. We've discovered how vulnerable they are with adversaries and hackers. So I think we've made a decision at a national security level and at a user level that we have to basically have a new way of doing things. And what you just mentioned is part of the redefinition, but also NIST has updated a lot of the operations, specifically with IoT devices and how to deal with default settings and follow policy and arrange. And I think one of the other biggest factors, I think, why we've had to redefine is because of the change in the technology landscape. We're now seeing much more machine learning applications. We're moving away from legacy systems to the cloud and to the edge. And pretty soon we'll be integrating 5G. And we cannot keep doing what we're doing with these two new technologies and be efficient and be safe. So there's a really need for new risk assessments and vulnerabilities and new processes. And I think that's what's happened with the DHS and CISA and NISA and NIST and with DoD particularly. I think they've looked at now the multi-domain battlefields at DoD and the communication efforts. Other things such as technography and encryption are being revisited now. And eventually, where a lot of money is now going through DARPA and other places is artificial intelligence, which is really, right now it's advanced machine learning, but it's gonna become much more sentient at some point. And so I think we really are pivoting. It's true what you said that we are redefining it, but the threats have not gone away. In fact, with the connectivity of the Internet of Things and 50 billion devices online, we're getting the expanding threat surface is just getting too big for us to manage without having technology involved. So I think what we'll be seeing is sort of a techno fusion, where we'll be learning to sort of utilize a machine learning, utilize our new technologies, and basically have more of a information sharing atmosphere between the private sector and public sector to the threats, and not just the threats, but also on sharing technologies and new capabilities to defend against the threats. And I think that is what's different. I think that traditionally the public sector and private sector have not necessarily shared because of privacy issues. And traditionally corporations have been reluctant to share with each other because of competition. I think that it's changed because we all realize now that we're just one hack away from being out of business or having our power turned off. So it's a brand new world. And I think this redefinition is basically a new era.
Okay, interesting. So what do you see? I mean, we've been in lockdown for a couple months. Threats about coming out of lockdown. What do you see from buzz around the DC area of how's this happen over the, what happens over the next, you know, 3 to 4 or 5 months?
You know, it's really more political, and it's up in the air, I think, right now what's going to happen. But I think there's a realization that we have to operate, particularly government. And right now it's been essential workers, but I think it's been more than that. But I think what's going to change is you're going to still see a lot more telework than you did in the past. And that's true, not just with government, but also with the private sector. And I think that we've learning how to function as a not necessarily being in the office. And I think we're going that direction anyway, but I think this sped it up. And I think you'll see now new technologies. I said, maybe more encrypted, secure VPNs, some, you know, other ways of basically protecting the worker, remote worker come into play. But it's not going to be as business as usual for a while.
Interesting. So do you think, and I've wondered over the last, I've just noticed driving across the country that some of the rural areas are less populated and people have moved to the cities, you know, to the populated areas as the internet and data information has grown. You think maybe we reverse that trend and we get some population distribution out of this?
Oh, it may happen. I know there's a lot of people moving south to Florida, but that's not necessarily a rural area. But I think so, because you're right. I mean, everything is you know, I agree with the observations that not everyone's in the same boat. If you're living in a rural community where there's not much threat, there's no reason that you should be basically following the same rules as someone in urban New York City, where the chances of getting infected from a virus is, you know, much, much greater. So I think there will be some adaptation, but I'm hopeful that we get some, you know, therapeutics and vaccines and other things and discover more about this threat that came and how it came, how to protect it next time. I think it was inevitable that we would have some sort of pandemic again. Matter of fact, when I was at Department of Homeland Security, we planned for those. We looked at all kinds of things, from smallpox and others. But, you know, you can do all the planning in the world, but when it hits, it's always different. And, you know, in this case, we didn't have a quick remedy for it, because it caught the world by surprise, because unfortunately the Chinese were not forthcoming on what it was and what happened. And at the time we could have prepared ourselves, it was a little bit too late.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've seen with that shift, like you go to the store, you can't buy a printer, can't buy a home office stuff. The internet patterns have changed. At the time of day, when certain times of day when everybody's on is different. It seems like the bottlenecks have changed. Everybody's on Zoom meetings now, and the bandwidth is down in your rural areas. Just, it's an interesting shift that I see. Have you seen any adaption to that?
Yeah, I mean, I've been basically, you know, looking at enhancing our Wi-Fi, you know, looking at augmenting it for that very reason, you know, because I have two daughters that are doing college courses on the same Wi-Fi at home, and sometimes it freezes, you know. I think that's a new reality, so I think you're going to be seeing some new technology, and maybe with 5G, but also with the bandwidth, make it may change the capabilities there a bit. And I know we're a few months off for that, but I think there'll be a focus there. And again, I think you're right. You don't necessarily have to be at the office anymore. You can work at a company in California and be located in New Zealand if you want, for a lot of jobs. So, I mean, it doesn't replace every job. There's still a lot of bricks and mortar, but I think a lot of this stuff that we do online is definitely can be done remotely. And, you know, I think that people are getting more comfortable with that as the day goes by. And I think even government.
Yeah. And that's a big thing. I saw, you know, the government sent everybody home to work. And like you said, that they really didn't have that even contingency before. They just said, go do it now. And you get the open, you know, the change in where even, we'll say, secure traffic needs to be is going to have a change in the routes and stuff.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you're going to have to, you know, basically, like I said, the VPNs are one thing, but you know, if we do get a break, you know, there may be ways to upgrade the hardware and other things too. And you know, separate nets and other things could be expanded. But you know, I think it is a new working reality. And national security obviously has a high priority, and some things are not going to change there anyway, and they're already probably prepared for this. But for the rest of us out here, you know, working daily and doing whatever we're doing or going to school or, you know, it is going to be different. And I think that we'll have to look at software capabilities. We'll have to look heavily at blockchain for encryption and protection and other technologies to really secure ourselves, because, you know, it's just basically a open season right now by the bad guys looking at all these great targets they have, and particularly in healthcare industry where they hardly have any budgets to protect hospitals and medical facilities. All of a sudden they're getting bombarded with ransomware. So I think we reacted pretty quickly and efficiently for a big transition of this sort in just a few months, but I think now we have time to prepare to really look at a new environment for cybersecurity that is much more remote and much more rural, and we enforce our other capabilities too.
Okay. So let's take a break and hear from our sponsors. We'll be right back after a minute.
Security Services are your cybersecurity experts with decades of experience providing professional training services for our clients in various industries. We offer professional training and certification in areas of cybersecurity, safety, health, and environmental services at our academy. Our in-person and online training provides a collaborative environment where students can interact directly with instructors through live chats or in private classrooms. Visit MurraySecurityServices.com for more information.
Welcome back to New Cyber Frontier. Still talking to Chuck Brooks, giving us an update from his level of looking at things at the top of the top five people to follow listed by LinkedIn and in the Washington, D.C. area. So before, we were talking about impacts and the kind of the new world as we're so to speak with after COVID-19 of people moving to home and the shift in different types of technologies, different types of data and network traffic. What do you think are winners and losers, or even things that will have to be addressed that we're starting to look at now in this new world going forward?
Well, I think if you're going to look at, you know, the same basic things will always hold true. You still, you know, got to have strong passwords. You need cyber hygiene. You need patching. And you always have to keep your antivirus software up to date. And you have to monitor your system. That'll be a given. What I think we'll now have to do, as I sort of mentioned earlier, is that we'll have to have more secure virtual private networks. We'll have to have more situational awareness with administrators and CISOs sort of taking on a more of a hands-on role with employees, because most employees don't have the knowledge or the capability to assess a lot of more of the sophisticated threats. So I think you'll see a whole change in policy there from a lot of companies. You'll also see, as I mentioned earlier, you're going to see new technologies such as blockchain. You're going to see other types of encryption being promoted. You'll see a return maybe to stenography, other things to protect data. And of course, machine learning, which will be used for hopefully detection and mitigation of threats. But again, you know, everything we had, and I just said there is too, is something that the adversaries have too, particularly nation states and sophisticatedly funded criminal hackers. So I think we're going to be still be a game of cat and mouse, and you know, we're going to have to continually monitor the situation. But the good news, as I said from starting the show, is I think, you know, for the first time, I think we have now created sort of integrated commands at DOD on cyber, and also at DHS with CISA, that now have a tremendous focus on the cybersecurity threat and the threat of connectivity that we all face now as we move into this new decade.
Mm-hmm. Do you think one of those, in looking at all those organizations that you mentioned, do you think there becomes more of a clear leader in cybersecurity, or is it still just kind of divided up amongst, you know, the different organizations and in different realms?
Well, I think they've deliberately let the civilian responsibilities go to the Department of Homeland Security and CISA, the new agency there, and their role is to defend other government agencies and the private sector and the public sector with critical infrastructure. So they have a defined role, and there's laws and other things that create that reality. With Department of Homeland Department of Defense, I think it's a different thing. We're now in a really enhanced technological era with a lot of our supply chain being very vulnerable, from everything from logistics to actually to the technology we used in tanks and planes and stuff. So they have a newer threat, and also have to protect our space assets, and that's why the new Space Force is created. So I think their focus is a lot more on the technical and also on the warfighting mission. So there is some crossover in information sharing, and of course the intelligence community plays a role on both sides there. But I think the two roles are sort of delineated correctly, and I think that there's a huge amount of investment going on both sides.
Yeah, recently President Trump signed an executive order for supply chain, and I wondered what you thought about that and where that's going to head.
That's already with vendors. That's already full speed ahead. They're already looking towards getting certifications. I think they have to be done within the next 4 or 5 years. But that's really important because it's always the weakest link, and a lot of the contractors are small business, and they don't have the security capabilities of a Northrop Grumman or a General Dynamics or a Raytheon or Lockheed Martin. And so often the link in the supply chain, and it only takes that for an adversary to get through. So now if you have this focus on securing the supply chain and knowing where your assets are, that's another thing, your situational awareness in the supply chain. And after us bringing back some of the manufacturing to the United States too, I think, you've made yourself more secure. And the supply chain is the same thing with the private sector too, with the retailers we're finding out right now too. So even with pharma. So, I'm really happy with that order. And I think there was a reluctance by some of the contractors initially to say, oh no, we don't need this, but I think people are coming on board, and they're coming on board in a big way.
How much do you see that you mentioned it bringing back businesses that were outsourced, through the early 2000s, there was a big push to outsource. How much of that you think brings back certain manufacturing and economies to the United States because of it's almost like a more protectionist mindset? What do you think about that?
Well, it may be a protectionist mindset, but if you look at it in economic terms, the loss they're facing because not having the capability to produce things, from the basic stuff, from personal protection equipment to similar things, just to drugs and stuff, is this realization. They've been sort of driven by economics originally to get things cheaper, but now I think a lot of Americans are and it's not just America, it's other countries too, looking at the fact that why should we be dependent upon other countries that may not have our interests, the best interests in mind? Why can't we do it ourselves, even if it costs more? And I think there's a new sort of attitude there that I think that most Americans want these capabilities back, even if they have to pay more, just to make sure that their security's insured, and they also have something that if there's another kind of a pandemic or calamity that happens, that we're not, basically running around begging for equipment that we need or capabilities that we may need.
Yeah, I think you hit that on the head. It's for our security, and we realize that outsourcing and lack of control of just numerous supply chains and products and software all coming together, and now we just don't know where they all come from. And getting some semblance of a control back on that is the next step that I think everybody's gaining an appetite for. I think you're right on that.
Yeah, no, I agree with you just said too. And I think automation and robotics is gonna play a big role in that too. I mean, I think we have the capability to build those type of factories. And also apply to many Americans, because I think we have a robust workforce. And, I think part of it is now that people recognize, and particularly large corporations, realize that to their bottom line, it's not in their interest to be dependent upon someone else.
Yeah, definitely. Well, kind of in closing here, anything you'd like to get out about what you're doing, what you're offering, things you'd like our audience to be aware of, go ahead and put that out.
No, sure. No, I've been doing a lot of writing lately. I'm a contributor to Forbes, so please check out my articles on Forbes. And also for GovCon, I've taken on that role too, in Homeland Security Today. So doing a whole lot of writing, which is great when you're stuck at home. And I just also urge the listeners that they can follow me on LinkedIn, just Chuck Brooks, and you'll go there, or on Twitter at Chuck D. Brooks. And I'm very active on social media, and I think it's a really good medium to learn about what's happening and also to share ideas and to work, particularly with government and with industry.
All right. Well, sounds great, Chuck. Thanks for joining today, and we will talk to you another time here.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure.
Thank you for listening to New Cyber Frontier. Remember to follow or like our post and circulate each new show to your networks. We keep you informed, bring you the latest news, explore new trends, and find the hottest topics. With New Cyber Frontier, you don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert. Just get plugged in. We encourage you to get involved. Tell us what topics interest you and join our mailing lists. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. That's newcyberfrontier.com. Check out our previous interviews and please let us know if there are any topics that you would like to hear discussed. See you next time on New Cyber Frontier.